Welcome, everybody, to episode 298 of WordPress Weekly for Wednesday, December 20th, 2017. I'm your host, Jeff Chandler, joined by Jay Tripp.
What's happening, Jay? Not much. How are you? Are you all ready for the Christmas upcoming holiday? Are you doing anything fun?
Well, first, it's my birthday, so say happy birthday to me, John.
Happy birthday to you, John.
Thank you. You have to take everything I say literally, okay?
Okay. Okay.
By the way, is one of the words I found out is annoying, or some list that came out by a college or something of the most annoying words, and literally was one of those words.
Your name was one of those words?
Wow. Man, you are on a roll. So we got a great show lined up for you all today. It's going to be all about privacy, law, GDPR, which you may have heard about. Sarah Gooding's done a great job covering that within the past couple of months. Just a couple of things. I want to send a shout out to Kristen Peterson, who is the wife of the late Jesse Peterson. I happen to see that she wished the late Jesse Peterson a happy birthday on Twitter. So I just wanted to say that Jesse is missed by the community. I know quite a few people were sad that they didn't get a chance to meet him at Camp US. So I just want to say, Kristen, that we're all still thinking about him. He's still in our hearts and our memories. And hope hope the boys are doing well, and all the best wishes to you. And hopefully it's a Merry Christmas for you and your family. And I also want to send a shout out to Sarah Gooding, who just gave birth to a healthy baby boy. So congratulations, Sarah.
Sarah and Marion now have their first baby boy. Happy, healthy, look great. So congratulations to you
too. They have a boy. And beautiful pictures that she's been posting on Twitter and elsewhere. A little bit of news that came out today, and then we'll get right into our interview, and that is WP Sitecare has acquired WP Radius. And WP Sitecare is a WordPress management and maintenance service provider founded by Ryan Sullivan out there in the good state of Utah. Ryan says that this acquisition has been in the works for some time. It actually increases WP Sitecare's customer base by about 20% and will allow it to experiment with the unlimited jobs model, which it turns out was one of the things that set WP Radius apart from some of the other service providers. So Ryan says that they're very interested in the unlimited jobs model and it'll allow them to experiment, see how it works out, see if it will be a good fit within WP Sitecare. And WP Radius is going to be operated as a separate entity for now, with plans to eventually be consolidated into the WP Sitecare brand. So there's not going to be any immediate changes if you're a WP Radius customer. Turns out WP Radius was founded in 2015, and financial details of the acquisition were not disclosed. That's like pretty much standard on anything that's required in the WordPress space. I learned the hard way when the tavern was acquired, and I dished out the actual number on an interview. I found out the hard way that's you're not supposed to do that. So I got a little talking to about how that stuff works. Thanks, John. And by the way, a transcript of that interview is out there on the web, so the number is available if you go and take a look.
Well, you know, we're a community of transparency, so it's hard to really know for sure when to not be transparent if somebody doesn't say.
I don't have the business acumen, so I'm thinking, well, what's the big deal? And then later I learned what the big deal was. I got my talking to. So congrats to Ryan, congrats to WP Sitecare. They're growing, and looks like things are on the horizon there.
We'll see more of this as WordPress becomes more and more mature, right? Their companies will find other companies that they enjoy working with.
Yeah, it's been a while since there's been an acquisition, really, if you know, between two WordPress companies. So, but yeah, this should happen more often. Probably throughout 2018, we'll probably see more of this, or a little bit more of consolidation.
You know, like the Ten Up had some acquisitions recently. I think there's like aqua hires all the time, where you know small groups merge and bring people in. So it's healthy. I think it's a sign that people are deciding where they want to go and where they want to fit and that they work nice together and everything else. So as people start to specialize and identify who they like working with and what they want to focus on, these are good things to see. So congrats to everybody involved again. Great.
So next week, the 27th, you and I, we're going to dive deep into the history of WordPress news throughout 2017. And one of the things I want you to think about is predictions. I mean, what kind of a show at the end of the year? I mean, what kind of podcast doesn't do predictions? So we'll make a couple of predictions. I want you to think about who or what company Automatic is going to acquire next. Or maybe already has, and they're just in the works. I'll put you on the spot.
Oh, gosh.
You wouldn't know any insider information, would you?
No. No. Gosh, heavens, no. I really don't know. But if at the rate that they're growing, it wouldn't surprise me that there's something happening, right?
There's something happening with Automatic.
Right. At the same time, with the focus on Gutenberg, but also the new version of WordPress.com VIP that's been slowly making the rounds and getting people moved over, and the WordPress.com for businesses. So there's a lot that they've got in the works that it seems like 600 people should be a lot of people, but when you've got that much going on and it's as impactful as it is, it's kind of hard for me to imagine more. I mean, are there big independent names in like the WooCommerce plugin space that I should know of that's their whole business is just making WooCommerce extensions? Like, those are the kind of partnerships or acquisitions that I think start to make the most sense for me today, but those seem pretty obvious, right? Like, I'm more fascinated in watching them do, like we've talked about on the show before, like a payment gateway kind of project, or see some future improvements to the mobile app experience that we have for kind of the fuzzy.com.org experience.
Fuzzy, huh? All right.
I'll call it fuzzy. I don't know. What do you think? I don't have a good answer.
That's for next week. It's something I just want you to put on the I want to get to our guest because she's awesome. And this is going to be a hell of a show. But her name is Heather Burns.
And I have nothing but questions for Heather. So.
She is a digital law specialist. He researches, writes, publishes, consults, and speaks extensively on digital regulations and political issues, most specifically those that affect the crafts of web design and development. She's also the founder of webdevlaw.uk. Heather, thank you very much for being on the show today.
Thank you for inviting me, Jeff.
So this is your first time on the show. So... Mm-hmm. As is customary, please tell us your WordPress origin story.
When did I start working with WordPress? It was probably around 2008, 2009. I was a self-employed web designer working with charities and not-for-profits here in Scotland. And I'm very old school. I started making websites in college when it was, hand coding in Netscape Navigator. So around 2008, that was probably when I first dove into WordPress. And then I used it for a couple of years, but I mean, you were around then, so it's the community sort of wasn't in place yet. But once local meetups started getting going, when did I go to my first WordCamp? I think it was around 2011. And it's just sort of snowballed from there. And then 2015 is when I stopped doing the customer-facing web design work, and now I just do exclusively the law and policy side.
That's exciting.
So how did that? I mean, did you always have an interest in the law side of things, or did it just sort of come naturally?
I mean, I started my career working in politics, and I think that's something that stays with you. And then I did a conference talk on one piece of legislation. It was a WordCamp talk, and that would have been in early 2012. And that just sort of kicked things off for me, where I kept writing and researching and speaking on these things. And at some point, and I realized I was much more interested in that than designing websites for clients. And I was almost in denial about it for a while, that I'll just keep going on with this stuff and I'll keep speaking at WordCamps about the stuff I really care about. And then I think it was after my first WordCamp Europe, or maybe my second, that I just sort of sat down and hit myself in the head and said, "What are you doing?" So, haven't looked back.
Well, I think it'd be, I mean, it's on top of my mind. I think it's on top of a lot of other people's minds that are involved in WordPress. It's a little thing called GDPR, which stands for General Data Protection Regulation. It takes effect in May 2018. But what is this policy? Who created it? Mm-hmm. And why should we take notice of it?
Mm-hmm. Well, you messaged me yesterday that that's where you wanted to start. And I was thinking about where do I approach this question from, from just, you know, a blank slate perspective. And I've done a lot of writing and speaking with conference audiences, with meetups, and with individual agencies and clients this year. And it's taught me to explain this in a different way every time. But what occurred to me is that in order for me to explain to you and the BP Tavern audience what GDPR is, first you need to understand the cultural basis and the legal basis behind GDPR, because we do have a divergence transatlantically over our cultural and our legal approach to privacy. Pardon me. So in Europe, where I am, we have a long tradition of privacy being recognized as a fundamental human right. That right to privacy is formally enshrined in law across a legal framework of many interacting national and EU-wide laws and policies. And that framework, it's applicable across all situations, all users, all sectors, all the information, whether it's the littlest thing or all the corporate data, it's all covered under the same framework. And we also have a culture of empowering the users. So when it comes to privacy, the power over the data is held by the person the data is about. Now, we contrast that with the American culture, and the reason I'm mentioning that is because, for better or for worse, that is where the bulk of the WordPress project is based. Mm-hmm. So the American tradition is that privacy is not really considered a fundamental human right, certainly not in the way we have it in Europe. What is the fundamental human right in America is freedom of speech. And in courtrooms, privacy is actually frequently held to be an impediment to the freedom of speech. And there's no comparable overarching privacy or data protection framework like we have here. What you have in America is very piecemeal. It's by sector or by state or by situation, but there's nothing covering it all. And the power over the data is said to be held by whoever is holding the data. So the fact that it's about you doesn't really matter. It's that all the power rests with the person holding it. So that's the first thing you need to understand is that we have very different cultural approaches. The second is what our different approach to is regarding the regulations that put that into law. After all, you said General Data Protection Regulation. In Europe, that privacy framework is put in through best practice standards, guidelines, things that are enshrined in law, but they're just that, they're guidelines. When there's an issue or there's dispute, there's a culture of sitting down, negotiating, speaking. It's cooperative intervention through the national data protection regulators, which is something we have here. If you have a data protection concern, you take it to the regulator. Whereas in the US, the way these things are decided are through legal departments. It's lawsuits, it's public shaming, it's adversarial litigation in court. Somebody just the other day asked me, can you give me a list of European lawsuits about accessibility law? And I was able to give them Carl Grove's repo of accessibility lawsuits in the States, but there isn't one for Europe because we don't have accessibility lawsuits here. Mm-hmm. Things don't go into a courtroom here. Mm-hmm. Yes, there are disputes over accessibility legislation, but they never get into a courtroom. They're dealt with differently. Mm-hmm. And I had a feeling the person was asking me the question in the context of, has there been a lawsuit that I need to learn about? Because I don't want to do this accessibility law thing unless I'm going to get sued, which is missing the point. There's a lot of comparisons to make between accessibility and data protection law, and that's the reason I've just used it. So you have this culture of you know, the American culture is do this so we don't get sued. Whereas in America, it's like, in Europe, it's do this just because it's the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. There's a quote from Eric Schmidt from Google who said, in Europe, people tend to trust governments and they're suspicious of companies, whereas in America, it's the other way around. And that's very true. So the reason I've just painted this set of cultural differences is not because I'm trying to drive a wedge between people and keep them apart. I'm to help us all understand where we're all coming from, because we're all coming to privacy from very different angles. So I want everyone to understand that when you're meeting with someone from Europe, that is their base expectation and experience of privacy, and vice versa. If you're meeting someone from the US, that is their base assumption. Mm-hmm. So how does this cultural difference tend to manifest itself in the WordPress community? It's a big problem. When I see a plugin or a theme or a developer, and the terms say, we take your privacy very seriously, to me, that's actually, as we'd say, we could say this on the air, I think it's a BS trigger. Mm-hmm. Because to me, that says that they look as privacy as a feature mm-hmm. rather than as a legal obligation. Mm-hmm. And again, how this manifests itself in the community, we are made by the people who show up at the mm-hmm. But the problem is that often includes people who don't have any cultural or legal point of reference to understand the rights-based responsibilities they have to European users under the plugin framework. So that means we have amateurs who want to do the right thing, but with the best will in the world, they don't have any legal training, they don't have any cultural reference, they don't have any legal reference, and they're developing the platform based on what they know, and what sort of privacy compliance they put in is often little more than as far as I know. Right. Now, Automattic's position is that they can't lead on things like plugin guidelines. It has to be up to the community. So again, we have whoever shows up for the table unwittingly taking responsibility for privacy compliance across the platform without that point of reference. If you look in the plugin developer guidelines, they are very American in that the legal areas that are covered, the legal requirements you have to do for your plugin, they're about GPL and copyrights and trademarks. Mm-hmm. In other words, they're about things which are litigated in American courtrooms.
Sure, right.
But European privacy is never going to be litigated in an American courtroom. So mm-hmm. the only things about privacy mentioned in the plugin guidelines are a little bit about data collection and a little bit about telemetry. And we'll talk about that, I think.
Right.
And so, speaking of the plugin, actually a project underway. I think it started at WordCamp US Contributor Day, where a group of people reviewed the guidelines, and it's on WordPress.org, a GitHub repo, where they're sort of being rewritten, and eventually there's going to be this WordPress code of conduct. It's sort of this blanket code of conduct that's going to be added or at least linked to the plugin mm-hmm. guidelines. But Jesse Nichols, I believe, has been participating in that project, and he's been suggesting that the legalese or the legal portions mm-hmm. of the GPL should be, you know, reviewed by somebody with, you know, the legal expertise, and should be separated out from the GPR or what have mm-hmm. with the plugin guidelines. So there's at least a couple of people mentioning, adding more of the legal stuff inside mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. licensing and code.
It's funny you mentioned, WordCamp US. There was a talk I watched, which was just actually, you know, the whole cultural conflict in a nutshell. It was the one on user tracking, and I don't remember who it was. Who gave it. And I'm not saying this is a criticism of that person or their talk, but they talked about using Google Analytics and Facebook tracking, Facebook pixel tracking and Hotjar to monitor and track users on an incredibly granular basis. And privacy only came up as a question from the audience. And the person's response was, well, it was only just a small local site. So it's not a big deal. But again, the European model would hold. It doesn't matter if it's only two people using the site, you know. Mm-hmm. Second comment was like, you know, obviously you wouldn't use Hotjar tracking on something like a medical site, because then HIPAA applies. Mm-hmm. which just begs the question of, I don't think anyone uses any medical site presuming that their usage will be like literally watched by someone on a screen. Mm-hmm. So it was almost as if, here's what you can get away with within the law. And again, on the audience asking, you know, is this legal? And the speaker's response was, do your research. And that to me was almost just like the whole WordPress problem in a nutshell, is that we just throw these things off out there for users to use as they see fit. And then they say, oh, by the way, if this is even legal or not, you have to do the research about it. So criticism of that speaker, but it was just that is the cultural basis that he knows.
Right. So on the flip side of that, it reminds me a little bit of some of the privacy concerns that Apple had went through this year sometime with apps in their various app stores, where mm-hmm. Some of their VPN apps had to get pulled out from like the Chinese app store because they weren't allowed there. And so Apple as a company has made the decision to embrace that burden, I guess, mm-hmm. right? Like they know that every region is different. They have their different laws and rules and regulations, and Apple chooses to shepherd that and try and nip it and own it. And so when they have to do something, they do it. And mm-hmm. it's not always pleasant, but at least there is someone with deep pockets, but also it's nice that there is someone that says we've put people on the problem that are experts in privacy in this country. We need to do this to be in compliance. And so this is what we're doing. Mm-hmm. Do you think that is the right way to do it? Or do you have something different in mind for, I guess, like WordPress, it's selfishly, mm-hmm. but like open source in general, other projects that have similar big kind of scaling problems across the world? What do you think is the right way to do this?
Well, I mean, that's been the rules of the road since the 90s. You know, you can't sell Nazi merchandise on eBay in Germany.
Right, right.
Would anyone argue with that? No, not really. There's obviously differing laws on hate speech and what is hate speech. And it's hard when you have the internet because it is an international medium. But maybe this is because I live and work on these issues, but I've never understood the mentality as because you work on the internet, because you have an international project, you can just drop it from the sky into another country.
Mm-hmm, right.
Without even thinking about, is this legal? Is this moral? Is this ethical? And mm-hmm. leaving it for people to find out.
I mean, the original debate with WordPress was always just the GPL by itself, right? Mm-hmm. Which is why there's probably, I mean, although it's not like it's, we don't have a wealth of knowledge around the GPL, but it really is the document that probably mm-hmm. is the most well documented all across like WordPress.org or the project in general, because there's kind of just been always an emphasis and eyes on how important that the GPL is to the project in general. Mm-hmm. But privacy is the biggie, I think. Unless it's just the GDPR maybe giving mm-hmm. an acronym helps. Maybe it helps to have initials where people can go, oh, that's the GDPR. Let's look over mm-hmm. here and learn more about it. Like, it may be psychologically that's all it takes, but I know like with HIPAA and COPPA and all those kind of things that just the psychology of it being a simple thing helped bring awareness to mm-hmm. those kind of things. But you're right that the cultural differences just between countries is especially, I mean, you really did pick two really good ones because they are kind of, mm-hmm. they're kind of polarizing. Even to us, or even to me as an American and being an American and living in America my entire life, I agree 100% with your assessment of like, mm-hmm. I've always put most of my life publicly available because I never really felt like anything was ever going to be private, even if someone pretended like, we take your privacy seriously. Mm-hmm. I don't really believe that that's true, so I never really worried about privacy. It was always free speech and being open with everything. Mm-hmm. So
that was before we all started generating data everywhere we go.
Right.
We are leaving a trail of metadata and information everywhere. And we work on a platform that, you know, can be used or misused to collect data, to store data, and maybe to pass data in ways we don't know, which aren't always in our own interest. And one of the things I've been really passionate about this year is trying to wake up the community to this, because, if you go to WordCamps, or if you're listening to this podcast, you are the 1% of the 29%. Right. I mean, the people who take an involvement in how these things work have an enormous position of power and influence over how 29% of the web works. And if we can get people thinking about these issues, about their responsibility, about how the ways they program a plugin can set off a chain of events involving the collection and retention of data, which could ultimately hurt people. Mm-hmm. Why don't we help this platform be the real force for good that it really could be, rather than constantly being on the back foot about these issues?
So do you think the GDPR next year will get that, will more openly start that dialogue, or do you think there's something else that should happen?
I think the dialogue should have started already. And it hasn't, yeah. And that concerns me. What GDPR is it's an over, it's a overhaul, a revamp, and refresh of the European data protection and privacy, the major piece of legislation, which, believe it or not, dated from 1995. So everything we've ever done on the web has been with a 22-year-old piece of data protection. Mm-hmm. So this is when you hear people freaking out, saying, you know, GDPR, oh my God, it's this huge new thing. It's actually not new. Mm-hmm. There's nothing in GDPR that wasn't there since 1995. What it does is it modernizes and expands things for the ways we collect and retain and share data now. So that's the first thing I've been cynical enough to observe this year, is that the people who screamed the loudest about their compliance obligations were the ones who weren't in compliance with the existing ones to begin with. There's also a corollary piece of legislation which was supposed to be finalized by now, but it wasn't. It's not. And that's the e-privacy directive. And that's things like cookies, metadata, telemetry, consent for mailing lists. So the whole framework is getting an overhaul. GDPR, it has 12, well, I've found it helpful to split it into 12 bits, and they concern awareness of what this is and how it works, and I think I've covered that for you already. Mm-hmm. Auditing the information you hold, communicating what data you collect, store, retain, share in privacy notices, strengthening the rights that individuals have over their data, strengthening the subject access request, which is how people invoke their rights over their data, mm-hmm. clarifying the basis for which you collect and process data, whether that's a legal basis or consent, because remember, in Europe, you do not have a right to data. Mm-hmm. You have mm-hmm. to justify it. There's new restrictions, on data concerning children, especially for children who are playing with apps on their phones. There's mm-hmm. procedures over data breaches. There's a requirement for the privacy by design framework, which includes things like privacy impact assessments. There's a requirement if you deal with certain kinds of data or a large volume of it for a data protection officer, which is actually their job. And there's new obligations on international data transfers, which in practice means the whole process of sending data from Europe where it is, you know, protected to America where it is not. Mm-hmm. So I have written a guide on my website. I'm not going to sit here and put your whole audience to sleep with the tutorial. But I'll pass that over in the show notes. You can read over the Christmas break, you know, as you do.
The GDPR, obviously, it's an EU law. All sites, businesses who collect, store, process personal data about residents of the EU. Is it just meant to protect residents of the EU, or is it limited to just residents of the EU?
It's applicable to people in the EU regardless of nationality. So when I met Sarah in Paris at WordCamp Europe, while she was in Paris, any data she was creating or on her phone was covered by GDPR. Didn't matter that she was an American visiting Paris for a week.
Can I ask a kind of a silly entry level noob never question? Is so the data that gets collected, do you have like actual physical like access to see who's tracking you all the time everywhere to understand who's paying attention? And then since I don't have that in America, what does that look like for you?
Well, GDPR is making that possible, and there's going to be a myriad of ways to do it. But the way this is going to impact the WordPress community is that you may have a site with 20 or 30 plugins, and each of them may be taking metadata in the background. Each of them may be serving a purpose, whether it's social media sharing or a contact form. And if you're administering that site, you need to put a public-facing privacy notice, which is a privacy policy. Mm-hmm. Your site is going to require a privacy notice now, communicating clearly exactly what data you're taking, how you're using it, who you're sharing it with, how people can invoke their rights over it. Mm-hmm. So every plugin developer is going to need to take a look at this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's get back to plugin developer guidelines, if you don't mind. Section 7 of the plugin developer guidelines pertaining to data collection say, documentation on how any user data is collected and used should be included in the plugin's README, preferably with a clearly stated privacy policy. So that's what the plugin development guidelines say. Over here, we've had a clarification on the language you need to use when you're collecting consent, when getting people. And you can't use qualifiers, and that's words such as may, might, some, often, possible. So it's no longer going to be enough for a privacy notice to say we may share your data with carefully selected third parties. Over here, it has to say we will share X information with X individual. You actually have to name the party, what data is being sent, and why. So now, getting back to those plugin development guidelines, they say that information should be included, preferably with a clearly stated privacy policy. In other words, the privacy policy itself is not required. So here's an example where the cultural legal divergence could actually damage the WordPress ecosystem. We are enforcing transparency and openness and clarity at a linguistic level, whereas the plugin development guidelines make the place where those words reside optional.
Mm-hmm. So does your bank, or credit card company or somebody would tell you exactly what data they mm-hmm. share and with whom, but do they give you any interface to see that data, to look at that data other than the guidelines in the policy? So I guess the question I'm asking and what I'm curious about is as a plugin developer, I'm curious, okay, and this is something like I've always thought would be really cool to exist in the first place, more or less to what your point, but like the extreme side of it is I really want to see, I would be really fascinated to see the my own personal graph on the web, like what tracking companies have tracked me and they know my age bracket, my income level, where I live, what I do, what I might drive, what I like, all those things. Like, I think that would be really fascinating to see someone else's version of me. And so in Europe then, Do they only have to tell you that this is exactly what they're doing with your data, or do they have to actually provide you with the log of who they've shared this with?
Yes.
Interesting.
Yes. Whether that's done by an automated interface, which is certainly encouraged under GDPR, whether it's done by something known as, you have the right to data portability, which is the right to take your data from one company and put it somewhere else. We know this as the WordPress block export import. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you've heard the apocryphal stories of Europeans writing to Facebook to get all the information, mm-hmm. literally getting 800 printed pages in the post.
Right.
You have the right to know exactly what data about you is being sent where. Mm-hmm. You have the right to know exactly what that data is, and you have rights over it. You have the right to tell them to stop using that. You have the right mm-hmm. to tell them to stop sharing it with third parties. And what we're doing in Europe is that those rights are granular. So it's no longer that by creating an account on a service, you're consenting to every conceivable tracking, usage, sharing of your data under the sun. Nope. Mm-hmm. You have the right to separate that out. So how do we do that in the WordPress ecosystem? How do we get that clarity? You know, my wildest dream is that, in the plugin repo, there should be an extra tab about data flows, data collection. Mm-hmm. Because right now, you basically have to be a developer who knows what you're looking for.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just as a typical end user, if this is something that I'm concerned with or whatever, I'd be looking for like a GDPR compliant tag or button or something that ensures me that, okay, that's something I'll know up front. It sounds to me like unless things change with the, so we used a contact form module from Jetpack, and it mm-hmm. actually saves entries, contact form submissions to the database. And mm-hmm. if you visit the tavern, you have no idea. If you visit the contact forums page, you have no idea that that's actually mm-hmm. your data and content saved in the database. So mm-hmm. unless we figure out a way to not save that into the database, I'm going to have to write a privacy page for the tavern.
Yeah.
You have to write one anyway.
Probably should, right?
I guess so.
Because how do I know what you're doing? How do I know you're not tracking me with Hotjar and a Facebook pixel? I always tell the horror story. Apologies to every audience I've ever spoken with that has been bored by this already. But when I spoke with Sarah a couple months ago, I used the example. There was a case here in the UK involving a contact form. And we don't know what the content management system was. It was never specified, but there was a data breach. It was a pregnancy advice charity, which, as you know, is code for abortion services. Mm-hmm. And they had a contact form on their website where women could inquire about having a termination. And the charity had no idea that the contact form submissions were stored on the database. And it was off-the-shelf hosting, no secure passwords, no HTTPS, no penetration testing, no nothing. Guess what happened? Anti-abortion activist hacked into the site. Mm-hmm. The database table containing 5 years worth of database entries of women who'd inquired about a termination. And this was their names, homes, addresses, phone numbers. And he was going to post them. He went onto an anti-abortion forum wanting to post it.
Yeah, right.
So that was a case where, I mean, not exaggerating here, contact right. forms on a database could have killed people.
Right, right. Or and, it definitely ruined lives easily. So,
and you had no idea. The charity didn't have any idea that those entries were stored on the site. And the data protection regulator's judgment, which at the time was the highest fine they ever gave anybody, was basically, we don't care. Do not care that you didn't know. It was your responsibility to know.
Right, right. We're pretty lucky, I guess, with WordPress that the data that WordPress itself collects is, at least for anything that I have of window into is strictly about WordPress itself. It's about versions, PHP versions, MySQL versions, plugin installation numbers. It's pretty vanilla and very not exciting in any way. But your point is that the plugins and themes repos are sort of the Wild West right now.
I wish I could say that was true, that the information WordPress collects is a bit vanilla, but there's a problem there as well. Remember that, again, the cultural difference is Americans sometimes don't understand that information is contextual here. So any information that could identify an individual is a personal data record. And this brings us to telemetry.
Sure. But WordPress just collects, like, what theme do you have installed? Does it need an update? That doesn't personally identify you or anyone. That just says...
But it does. If there's a string of data that says this installation uses this array of plugins, this theme, this PHP, that is, it could be identifiable. So a developer got in touch with me recently, very concerned that he uses a very popular, prominent plugin on all of his agency projects. And he got a message from the plugin developer saying, hey, we see you've got a lot of installations on our plugin, some of which are on sites that have a lot of users and a lot of posts, and we're about to release a new version, so we'd love to help you walk you through the update. And they were aghast at this because they were looking around saying, how did they know? And it turns out that this plugin sends back a shedload of telemetry.
Sure.
Now, that he showed me the telemetry mm-hmm. once he knew it was being collected, and I almost fell out of my chair. Now, there's nothing in that plugin's privacy policy that even says they're collecting telemetry.
Right.
There's no means of consent. So now again, going back to our plugin developer guidelines, they say, in the interest of protecting user privacy, plugins may not contact external servers without the explicit consent of the user via requiring registration with a service or a checkbox within the settings. This method is called opt-in. There is no opt-in. There's no notification. And the amount of telemetry being sent back is so concerning that this agency, they've actually raised it with the plugin through their responsible disclosure.
Right.
Because one man's telemetry turns out to be another person's security breach. Now, the e-privacy directive revamp, guess what's in there? Telemetry. Mm-hmm. The amount of telemetry, what telemetry you can send back, is about to be regulated in Europe. And a lot of popular WordPress plugins are not going to pass the test. So again, how do we address this in the WordPress community? We have an ecosystem that's sort of determined to not adhere to any one legal system and just make more sort of general best practice guidelines.
Well, we sort of do need an intersection of what rules are you supposed to follow? What are the expectations for which individual countries that have what regulations or limitations? I mean, there is generally like, just do the right thing. But like you established in the very beginning, the right thing is like different all across the board because my lack of privacy doesn't even feel wrong half the time because it's all I've known. So what someone else's version of that is different than the next. And so I think you're right that some education and documentation and anything is probably super valuable, even though today it is still like up to everyone's good graces to do the right thing. Hopefully more people do the right thing, and that pressures everyone to continue to turn their attention to the people that do the right thing and support the right people and plugins and themes that are doing things the right way. At least, again, on the WordPress side of it, and to be clear, not that I'm trying to like go back to it, but at least for the data that gets collected about active plugins and themes, there's no domains or site IDs or none of that is important. All that matters is it active and what percentage of sites is it active on? So the at least what I see is the data that WordPress core itself gets is there. It's not even like it needs any anonymization because there's nothing to anonymize. The thing that I've always kind of joked about is like that comes in WordPress core that has always been a funny concern for me is like Gravatar being built in. Mm-hmm. And so when you instantly activate a site and you enter your email address and it phones home to Gravatar to get you your little hello, howdy, admin link and, you know, shows who you are in WP admin. Those are the kind of things that I think are interesting because that is a third party service that is integrated into WordPress. Mm-hmm. That
and as we've seen by in presentations, can be used to personally identify someone.
Exactly, right.
Even and so that code, just searching across the web for that code, which shows up in the source file, in HTML, you can identify people in their email addresses.
Yep, that's the tricky part, is those kind of things. And then, activating a Kismet, which everyone that has comments on would do, is just so easy. Just click it, enter your WordPress.com code or not, and now you're instantly putting all your comments, go straight to automatic in a Kismet for approval and then come back through. And so those are the things that really strongly reinforce your point about these third party. And I guess it's easy to consider WordPress.org as like a third party, but I don't really necessarily see it that way yet, because to me, it's like if I have a phone and I download an app from the official app store, I assume they're looking at something that has to do with the apps I'm trying to update. I ask them for an app and they're giving me the app. And so I have a theme installed on my WordPress. Does it need an update? Like, to me, there's kind of apples and apples there, but I get what you're saying really strongly about third-party Gravatar, Akismet, plugins, themes, and it just being sort of open right now, very open for everyone to do anything. And there is not a lot of accountability or repercussion if something goes wrong. And that's pretty scary, I think. I know for BuddyPress and BBPress, we don't collect anything. Mm-hmm. We never have. It's never been anything that we felt a need to do. But I know that other plugins have opt-in usage tracking, EDD. I think WooCommerce has some. Others have a lot. And then the tangent here is I think of like, if a plugin includes a link or includes something for a support request, I know some plugins will include version numbers of the plugin, active plugins that are installed, a PHP log of what might be running in the system on the server or anything else. So on that side of it,
there's a healthy middle ground to be achieved.
Yeah.
I mean, security is certainly allowed under the revamp. That security telemetry, absolutely. Support requests, that's allowed.
Yep.
I keep coming back to this, but here in Europe, we're going to have a legal definition of what telemetry you can and can't send.
Right.
So your American plugin developer who has no knowledge of that, no cultural point of reference to even know to ask the question, might be sending back information that just wouldn't be allowed here.
Yep.
In all the talking I've done with agencies this year, every single session I've gotten questions on specific plugins. What is X doing for GDPR? What is it? And it's like, I don't know. You're asking me this on the spot? I don't know. But as the compliance enforcement date approaches, I'm seeing myself a lot more hardline. Maybe it's because I turned 40 at the weekend and I'm officially a grumpy old woman now. But I am very rapidly approaching the point where when people ask me that question, my answer is going to be, don't use that plugin.
Right.
I mean, if you don't have clarity on what their GDPR intentions are, if you're looking in their privacy policy and you see a bunch of nonsense legalese written by a lawyer that says, we take your privacy very seriously. Find an alternative. And I hate that that's where I'm heading, but you know, you can either find a plugin that does the job and provides you with that transparency and that clarity, or try to explain to a plugin developer outside the EU why this is important. Mm-hmm. And we all have to choose how we spend our time.
I think the expectation is tough, because we expect that when there is, you know, like there's GPL, we're in GPL V3, there's multiple versions of a GPL. And so you choose which version of the GPL that you adhere to. And so is it true? And because I'm uneducated about it, I should probably know, but I don't. I'm assuming there are different versions of the GDPR, or is there just one canonical version and everyone follows
there
it
is
as it changes?
One across Europe, the whole continent. Okay. And individual countries are permitted to put in things above and beyond.
Okay.
So GDPR is the baseline.
Okay.
So, but that's, you know, the whole point of European legislation is that it tries to move towards this idea of one continent of 500 million people trading under one set of rules. And please, please do not ask me about Brexit.
I hadn't planned on it, but that could be a whole other show.
I'm going to need a different drink for that.
do you feel like here, at least maybe in the U.S., there's this attitude of, hey, who in the hell is the EU to dictate how I can use my site? You know, who are they to tell me what I can and can't do?
Yeah, there's obviously going to be that. I've certainly seen that in some of the WP Tavern comments. I even saw one saying, I don't have to obey EU rules, so I'm just going to block that. I'm going to block people from the EU. And that sort of gets into what one of the questions I've been personally trying to nudge people towards, which is, you know, if you decide you're not going to adhere to this set of development guidelines for whatever reason, then you have to tell me what sort of accountable, transparent, publicly accountable privacy standard commit to using, especially given the lack of any comparable framework under American law. Because again, you can't just say we care about privacy. You know, as they used to say in school, show your work. What are you going to do to prove to me that I can trust your plugin, that I can trust you, that you've not hired a lawyer to throw some mumble jumbo at me, you're not crossing your fingers behind your back? We have, and this is why I worry that we risk splitting the ecosystem. So we have one set of developers who have a really comprehensive, transparent, accountable framework we have to work with. And the other, it's the, you know, you wonder why people call the web the Wild West. So if for whatever reason, whether that's spite, contempt, or just can't be bothered, you're not going to guarantee that you can safeguard my data in the rights that I have as an EU citizen, tell me what you're going to do instead.
So in Europe with the GDPR, is the reason why, let me ask this question the right way. So if they're introducing rules about telemetry, does that mean that there has been people or entities or companies that have been just doing it wrong or getting too much data or not being forthcoming with it, where people were just kind of globally uncomfortable with what was being collected, and so now there's guidelines that are being put in place? Or is it preemptive? Is this like reactionary, or how is telemetry being introduced?
Have you ever heard of somebody called Edward Snowden?
Well, yes, of course.
Yeah. As the saying goes, it's the metadata stupid. And I didn't realize this until I was sitting in a room with his editor. It's the metadata stupid. I'm not calling you stupid, Triple J. It's the trail of data that we leave everywhere. There was a major global data breach caused by a WordPress plugin. And by right, we as a community, as a project, should have been raked over the coals for it. But we weren't. And the reason it wasn't is because it was the Panama Papers leaks. It was the Panamanian law firm that all the wealthy people go to when they need to hide their money in a tax shelter. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the thing which opened the floodgates to that data breach, which resulted in, you know, the Prime Minister of Iceland resigning, was the Revolution Slider plugin.
Interesting.
And through that was literally the door to all that data. And why didn't we as a community use that as an opportunity for self-reflection? It was because of the people who are in the data. You know, oh boy, boo-hoo, some wealthy tax evaders got their data exposed. But, you know, aren't we supposed to be into net neutrality? And net neutrality declares that all the data is the same. And I'm going to tip Tim Nash for using this as an example in WordCamp Manchester. What if that Revolution Slider plugin breach had been an adoption agency and not a law firm for tax evaders?
Right.
I genuinely feel that we have just, as a project, we have squeaked by on sheer luck alone one too many times. And it's a matter of time until that luck runs out. And what is going to happen then is that we're going to have that, and it's not even going to be a private dialogue that we should have had after the Mossack-Fonseca breach, because it's going to be in public with regulators and prosecutors, and they're going to ask questions like, show us the documentation configured the software in this way. Mm-hmm. You know, who made the decisions about this being the telemetry being sent? Who did the programming? Why wasn't this compliant? Why was this data being leaked? Mm-hmm. Where was the leadership on this project? Can you show me the documentation of what data protection training the people who made this were given? Because that's actually part of GDPR. You have to document the data protection and privacy training your staff receive. Mm-hmm. And when that reckoning comes, what answers as a community are we going to be able to give? Track tickets. Where people say things like, as far as I know, it's okay. Our luck is going to run out sooner or later if we do not do something about this. Mm. And I can't do it on my own. doesn't look like the community has much motivation to do it on this own. So it's a really, yeah.
It's interesting that on this, that WordPress being, like you've pointed out, largely an American project, but growing internationally, obviously, but still largely American. Mm-hmm. We also conversely have probably the most unorthodox outlook on privacy. So it is sort of it will be hard to find deeply educated American who's into the software and into the global privacy side of it enough to
institute these changes.
Right. Or even just knock on the door and influence the project. Like we really have to do this. Right. So
Matt, and he's very against storing any kind of data that is unnecessary, unwarranted. He's very up on the privacy situation of user data, but doesn't seem like, we said, an attitude or mentality that's shared across the project as a whole through contributors, plugin developers. Right.
And it's almost kind of sad, but I mean, you know, certainly some of the training I've done with WordPress agencies in the UK this year, if you explain GDPR as what it is, which is a really wonderful toolkit to use to empower people to user protection, they practically are evangelical. They want to jump out of their chairs and run back to their desks and start putting this in right away. If you frame it as empowerment, if you frame it as motivation, people cannot wait to use it. If you frame it as, oh my God, this is a law, we have to comply or else we're going to get a fine and we're in America, so it's not a problem. You know, you're a great opportunity there. So I'm trying to be that person, but maybe I need a louder megaphone.
Well, that was the same thing with Kappa in the old school days, is when it was, okay, users of online websites have to be 13 years of age or older. It was one thing to say you have to do it, but it was another thing for an open source piece of software like PHPBB to say, if we put a COPPA warning in the front of every online registration for our forums, we will garner more community support and we will have more installations because we will internally already support COPPA out of the box. And it was kind of a no-brainer back then in 2001 to just have it be part of the PHPBB project. Even if I look at the Wikipedia page for the GDPR, which I have skimmed, but I'm now also currently skimming.
Sorry to hear that.
I know, but you know, I'm doing my quick while I'm on the microphone skim of things. But you're right that it is kind of worded intentionally positively, the same as you would want to word accessibility standards or localization standards in plugins and those kind of things, where... I wonder if there's an opportunity for someone to build a good turnkey base implementation of what a privacy agreement rule type framework would be. Like the folks at EDD have a base plugin for licensing and stuff. Yeah. Like if plugins had like a pull this from GitHub, this is what you can start off with, and underscores for privacy.
I would love every WordPress site to have the option of a privacy dashboard that, it is not up to the individual website administrator to install a plugin like Snitch, examine the data flows, and translate them into plain English. You should be able to pull the privacy details about every plugin you're using on the site into one place. Mm-hmm. So you can generate that privacy notice so that everyone using your site can have that transparency and have that confidence. That's a project we should be jumping.
Let's do it then. Let's build it. I think nobody else is going to do it, right? So here we go. We already decided.
No one's doing anything over the next week anyway.
So for someone like me, I contribute to and run WP Tavern. We don't have a privacy policy. We haven't had a privacy policy since I launched the website. Mm-hmm. If I were to create one, well, looks like I'm going to have to create one. I'm on the record now. Seems like
no pressure.
So, 5 p.m. Friday, Jeff.
Under this privacy policy, do I list out the plugins we're using or any plugin that, let's say...
You don't have to list the plugins. You have to list what data you're collecting from users. Mm-hmm. And that includes, what tracking cookies you're using. Mm-hmm. Not saying you would do this, but how many times have you filled out a contact form on the site and then you get every spam under the sun for them for years? Mm-hmm. If you're retaining... That information for any other purpose, you need to clarify that. Not that you should be using collected emails for marketing. If you're sharing information with other sites, and yes, that includes social media thing. So remember, if you've got a Facebook button on your site, everything your users are doing are being passed to Facebook, even if they don't have a Facebook profile. I just scared you there, didn't I?
Oh, not me. I just assume Facebook has everything about me already out of the box. They just know everything.
Now, if you had advertising on your site, those ad networks would be taking a lot. Do you? I don't know. I have an ad blocker. So you've got to think of what information is being passed to them as your users read your site. Any telemetry from plugins, things like that.
All right. So let me tell you, John,
It's your birthday and Christmas is coming up, so maybe a listener can help you out by writing the privacy policy for the tavern, right? That's a good gift.
I realize I've probably sounded a little downbeat, but if I have, it's because...
I don't think so.
I've seen the potential of how empowering this framework can be, and I would love people to run with it and to feel that they can use it and feel that they can trust it and use it for what it is. And it's kind of hard to always be on the back foot. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Bonnie Bedelia in Die Hard, people are coming to me for the answers. Yeah, right. And I don't know what to give them.
Well, it is an uphill battle. It's like is. you because people don't know how serious, you know, people don't know how serious the cancer is until you show them, like, here is how bad it is. And then you go, oh, and then you say you could have done something about that 10 years ago. But, you know, until someone says.
Yeah. What I'd love is for your listeners, your readers, and anyone on Automattic to please get in touch and let me know how we can work together next year in 2018 to turn this ship around. Improve privacy, improve data protection for the 29% of the web in a positive, motivating, and empowering way. I don't want people to be afraid of, oh my God, the law. I want people to embrace user protection as a development ethos. And I'm here. I'm ready to help. Just get in touch.
I bet you probably have a lot of luck with the audio, like with plugin companies who make plugins that are sort of deeply user interfacing, like Gravity Forms or any form plugin, I would think, because they are in the business of collecting data, that those to me seem like the obvious, like their entire business model is built on selling the software that people put their data into. Mm-hmm. Like if it were me, that I would want your expertise in that area, because we've talked about, you know, I have a plugin and I'm just collecting a bunch of people's data. Like that person is just, they're gonna always try to do that because that's just what they want to do. But I think the catalyst, the way that people start really seeing the effectiveness of it, is less on Automattic, but more on the $1 million, $2 million, $5 million companies that their small team of 20 employees goes away when they start violating privacy policies internationally, and they have to reap what they sow from that. Then they have to bear the repercussions of the damages that might come through, like you talked about earlier with the revolutions.
I don't want to see what you mentioned earlier, which was the tag in the plugin repo. You know, I don't want there to be the European suite of privacy-friendly plugins and the American suite of anything goes, you chance your luck plugins. We are at risk of divergence in the ecosystem. I would almost go so far to say we're at risk of a fork. So let's work together to turn this around.
Mm-hmm. I kind of think like we talk about being too big to fail. It's like, you know, people have said that for a while, especially in America with the major automotive companies.
Okay, yeah.
But I think you get to a point where you are so big, you always fail. like WordPress is 29% of the web. We're going to fail. Like with every time that there's a privacy concern or a thing, we're going to screw it up before we get it right. Mm-hmm. So to know, I think step one, right, is accepting or acknowledging that you have a problem. And so
denial, anger, bargaining.
Right.
No, we haven't even mentioned this project, but Sarah covered this back in October. If you go to GDPRWP.com, there's a project that's underway that's creating an industry standard across plugins, GDPR for WordPress. So there's a group of people working to put something together for plugin developers to ensure that their plugin follows the GDPR. Have you been following the progress of this project, Heather, and your thoughts on it?
I have, and I think it's necessary, but I also have some concerns about, and this is something I've tried to liaise with a little more centrally. It gets back to the thing of leaving legal compliance in the hands of amateurs.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the checking? Where's the verification? Because let's say some recommendations, you know, some developers adopt their standard and develop along and it was wrong. Mm-hmm. Where's the fallback going to be?
Well, and that's like on the footer of GDPRWP.com, which we should all be thankful for their transparency. But the first part of the disclaimer is we are not lawyers. And so, you know, when what you're looking for is some.
No,
I just worry that we're going to have a situation where there's an investigation into a data breach and you have some crotchety regulator trying to get to the bottom of it. You know, where was the critical decision point? And, you know, it turns out, oh, I was following something I Googled on the web that was, it was a volunteer project done with the best will in the world.
Right.
So I would like to see that project actually being a bit more central. And I would like to see the people who are committing to it being protected.
Right.
Someone needs to be checking their work. Someone needs to be looking over their shoulder. This is why I decided not to be involved with it, because no one's protecting me.
Right.
You know, I'm self-employed. I don't have anyone paying my bills. I don't have anyone protecting me with a contract. If I screw something up in a voluntary project, it still could have repercussions on me.
Absolutely. Right.
So.
I don't pretend to have the political background that you have. I've only recently, I mean, at 38 years old, so I'm 2 years from 40, but I've only recently really gotten involved in politics, and only at a local level. So like some of the listeners have probably heard, I'm a trustee on our village board of 4,000 citizens. And so, but we have had recently lost our legal counsel as a municipality and are going through the process of figuring out who our new legal counsel is going to be to help represent us when we have legal troubles and matters, and it's the selection process we are very fortunate to have had really good candidates and people come forth and publicly be involved in our board meetings and kind of do a public interview with them, but. We as a village need credible, educated, experienced representatives that are deeply educated in the things that municipalities of our size need to deal with. And so sometimes that is one really brilliant attorney, and other times that is a firm of 50 brilliant attorneys, depending on what it is that you're trying to achieve. And so for something like the privacy and the forever changing kind of rules and regulations and expectations around it, we really do need qualified professionals to guide us and help us. Automatic has great qualified people working on GPL and DMCA type stuff, but on the privacy end of it, I don't know that there's been a lot of discussion about it.
Well,
I'm not a lawyer. I have a postgraduate certification in interlet. No, I'm not a lawyer. And I would not commit to any sort of project like that without a contract, without being indemnified, and certainly not without getting paid. I think you've probably sensed this yourself working in politics. There are things that, you know, I am not going anywhere near that.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the case where it's like, I want to make a difference, but not without support, not without protection.
Well, I hope we don't end up in a situation where there's a massive data breach, GDPR is in effect, and it sets off a chain reaction where people all down the line, through plugin developers, through core, maybe plugin review team, everybody gets in trouble. And I guess that'd be one way to raise awareness of GDPRs.
Well, I guess
that'd be the wrong way.
So, Heather, and maybe I'm assuming you might have some insight into this, but maybe not. So if things don't get handled in the legal system, when there's a problem and nothing has happened legally, what does happen? That's just an out of court discussion, settlements, fines, what?
European regulators work on, certainly the UK one does, on a four level system. You know, they're cooperative. They're consultative. They'll come and sit down and talk with you.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll work with you to fix the problem.
Right.
When you hear the horrendous scaremongering about £20 billion fines or 4% of your global annual turnover, that is only the fourth stage of a process.
Okay.
or if it's there's been something truly horrendous and egregious, like Uber.
Right.
You know, something like that. Average little business is not, oh my God, going to get a £1 billion fine. So they'll work with you, but they're going to ask you really tough, difficult questions. They're going to want your, they want to see your privacy impact assessment. What sort of discussions did you have before you did a single line of code on the project where you worked through the privacy issues? Show me the documentation of your staff training. What sort of data protection training did you give them at their induction? Who made these decisions? Who's accountable? And if you're coming up with those answers on the day they ask, you then have two problems. But even before you get to those sort of internal dramas, the risks are going to be reputational. The risks are going to be someone like me being in a bad mood saying, you know what, that plugin's just caused a data breach. Don't use it. It's going to be bad press, not in the tavern, but in the ecosystem. Again, because of the Mossack Fonseca data breach, because of the nature of it, we're not going to be so lucky next time. And, you know, this is probably something you're going to mention in the news section, but the White House is now using WordPress. The knives are going to be out. So we all have to do that a little bit more to protect the project. Not because we don't want to end up in court or with a fine. We shouldn't even be thinking in those terms of we must do this or else. We should be thinking about user protection. We should be thinking about protecting the people and the data, and we should be thinking about the reputation of the project.
I think one of the, I think you probably hit the nail on the head, is because most of these, because the fallout from these types of things has a tendency to go to American court and then just point at the person and go, your fault, and now their life is over, that people, the American approach is generally not to stick your neck out, because you are going to absorb 100% of the penalty for if I put my name on all of WordPress privacy, I'm the person who takes the fall when something goes wrong. And it's because there isn't that cooperative outlook on things. And we deal with that in just my municipality, which is when we're trying to get a really fun event to happen in our downtown village square, there are people that will accidentally try to make them check 50 boxes to make sure that this event is flawless. And then there are some of us that say, hey, let's make sure that everything is safe and let's cooperate with them when a question comes up, and let's do what we can to be supportive of one another to make sure that the really cool stuff that we're trying to do happens. And so making sure that there is some type of, I don't know what to call it, but like...
Yeah, so I mean, one of the requirements of GDPR is that if you process certain kinds of data or a lot of data in volume consistently, you need to hire, you need to appoint an individual called a data protection officer. And it doesn't have, doesn't even have to be in-house, but it's someone who actually does just that, puts their name to your data protection compliance. And you have the right to appoint one voluntarily, even if you don't need one. And I am encouraging everyone to do that as a sort of health and safety officer for data protection. We have someone who goes around and says, move that box away from the door. We have someone that makes sure the fire extinguishers are checked every year. Why shouldn't we have someone who is the good cop, just making sure that your procedures and your processes are in place, and as the bad cop, who is that obnoxious person you want in a project planning meeting, who raises their hand and says, have you really thought about that?
So I really like, I really like using real life analogies and comparisons for this. I use that for security all the time, because in an emergency, your ER responders have a different role than the people that are in the ER itself. Someone on site is there to make sure the person survives. The next person in the ER, once they've been transported in an ambulance, their job is to make sure that they survive longer, right? Like what the work you have to do when someone is in an accident and you're in the middle of the highway is different work than it, that you do in an operating room where everything is surgical and you're trying to save someone's life and so on, versus long-term care is a different role. And so the way that someone chooses to respond to a privacy breach is different than the way that someone chooses to respond to privacy concerns or the privacy verbiage. Mm-hmm. And so I like using real world comparisons for these kind of things, because I think they really do bring a lot of the complexity or the anxiety for some of this stuff down to like a very rational level. And it's honestly, it's one of the reasons which maybe I will rethink after this conversation, but BuddyPress and BBPress don't come with any version of privacy, because what the research that I've done is that these things are so complex, they are so culturally rooted, that trying to give someone one version of privacy does shut off other versions of privacy. And so there does need to be some more globally aware, accessible intersection of what's right and what's wrong, because honestly, the decision to kind of do nothing, it looks apathetic and not empathetic. And even though it was with empathy that we chose not to package any privacy features with either one of them. So there's a lot to take away from our discussion today. I'm really happy that we had it. I'm really happy that you hung out with us. This is really educational.
So that's, we covered the gamut here. We covered a lot of material, and I'll give Heather the last word. What is it? We've covered this before, but what is it you truly hope for going into 2018 as we approach May, that you want to see from the WordPress community?
I want to see all hands on deck making WordPress a force for good that people can trust, and that people can be empowered to change for the better. And don't let the fact that it involves, oh my God, law, put you off. It's a toolkit for empowerment. It's a means of protecting and safeguarding your users in these really quite scary times we're living in. And it will make you a better developer and a better site administrator at the end. So please get in touch with me and let me know how we can work together to make this happen.
And I don't know if you caught it, but every question at the Q&A section of Matt's State of the Word was about Gutenberg, except for one. Mm-hmm. But the obvious, Morten Rand Hendrickson, who had this very, I felt like I had to graduate Harvard to understand the.
Whereas I was watching it like jumping up and down going, yes, yes, you beautiful Norwegian.
Perfect. You may not have.
I didn't put him up to it, by the way.
Can you sort of give us a quick summary of what his question was, and then your thoughts behind it?
He was continuing the question he asked last year, which inspired my whole WordCamp Europe talk, which is about members of the WordPress community taking a more public, prominent role in leadership across the web, outside the community, on these larger issues. The GDPR was the example he's given, and Matt's answer was, you know, someone please step up. Mm-hmm. So I could say is check your email, Matt.
Nice. I mean, there's issues. We've had a lot of people championing, campaigning for accessibility as something do by default, just outright, that it's the right thing to do. And now it sounds like privacy should have already been that way, but now it sounds like privacy is we're trying to.
I have so many ideas and so many things I would love to do, but you know, I cannot do them on my own. I need to get paid. I don't have an employer. I don't have anyone paying for my time at all, much less time I would like to devote to the project. So I need the support to make these things happen, and I'm hoping that someone.
All right. So if somebody has questions, an agency, they want to learn more about GDPR, how can they get a hold of you?
So I'm on Twitter @webdevlaw. And my site is webdevlaw.uk.
Okay.
And I'm around to talk. Yeah.
Yeah. Here's hoping there's not a global meltdown come May of 2018.
I think we'll still be around in May.
Heather, thanks a lot for participating on the show, giving us insight into this. You know, this show, it's opened my eyes to be. I like your explanation of empowerment, because to me it's like, oh no, here's another privacy law from the EU, just like the cookie law, just like the right to be forgotten. Here's another law that the EU says I have to abide by. To hell with them, I don't have to worry about it. But after this discussion today, my viewpoint, my perspective has changed, and now I'm going to be on the good side of things. I'm going to work on the privacy policy page and see what I can do to help further the cause here.
Job done. And now I will wish you a happy birthday just for that.
Thank you.
the December babies.
It was going to be a terrible birthday for you, Jeff, until now. And now it'll be a fantastic birthday going forward.
Yeah, thank you very much. And again, Heather, thanks a lot for your time and your expertise. Yeah. And enjoy the rest of your day.
And let me just give personal congratulations to Sarah. Well done.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Great. There we have it. So, man, we covered a lot of ground there. John, let's wrap it up really quick with our picks of the week. I see that you don't have one. You better hurry up.
I don't have one. Oh. I better find one.
Oh, unbelievable. So my pick is called Frontenberg by Tom J.
Oh, that's cheating. That was going to be my pick too.
No, I already picked it. So if you go to frontenberg.tomjn.com, it's actually Gutenberg end of a website. So you can go there. You don't have to install the plugin, and you can play around with the blocks. There's a demo post there with images, image columns, and all kinds of different ways you can tinker and test Gutenberg without actually having to use it on a live site or install a plugin. So very cool work by Tom. He's going to be working on that, making sure that it's running the latest version of Gutenberg as it comes out, and we'll link in the show notes. And did you find
something? I've got two quick picks, but they're sort of selfish ones. So a gentleman that by the name of Renato Alves is an engineer at XWP for several months now, and kind of, I don't want to say like secretly, but kind of silently, has been working on WP CLI support for BuddyPress and BBPress. And so if you go to his GitHub on, I guess we could probably have it in the show notes, it's easier than spelling it out here. He has been contributing to the official BuddyPress and BBPress GitHub repos with branches that have support for all of the WP CLI bits and bobs that you would expect for all of the components and queries and favorites and subscriptions and activity and all that kind of stuff. And so these are my picks of the week. One, because he has largely been shepherding alone a project that the team has been wanting someone to help with for a while, for at least the past year. And so having first class built in WP CLI support in those plugins is going to be awesome. But two, WordPress has a history of a lot of people working alone or silently on things. And I don't want to say thanklessly, because folks like Andy Peetling and Donica and everyone that, I mean, at this point, there are too many people to name that have come in, made an enormous impact, worked on one thing, and then that has been their contribution. But Renato has been around on both those projects for a number of years. He's got lots of patches. He's been a contributor for a long time. And he stepped up to really own the WP CLI support for both of those plugins. And so I want for him to get his 5 minutes of fame on the show today. But also, I appreciate him taking this on and doing it for both of those projects, and the rest of the team does, and the projects are better for it. And so my picks of the week are the WP CLI support for BuddyPress and BBPress.
Excellent. So that's going to do it for this episode of WordPress Weekly. You can find show notes for this episode and all other episodes on wptavern.com. And you can follow me on Twitter, all 280 characters of myself, at JEFFR0. And how about you, John?
Twitter and GitHub at JJJ and JJJ.blog, where I very rarely blog anything under 280 characters. It's usually thousands of characters, and people would rather follow my Twitter account than my blog.
Probably. I can't really in on your blog.
No, you can't.
Just write miles and miles worth of text. Anywho, and next Wednesday afternoon. So long, everybody. Say bye, John.
Bye, John. Bye, Heather.